2, Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. No Thomas Drance on the show today. He is traveling back from Southern California, where he was covering the Canucks. So he'll be back in studio on the show on Monday. Speaking of the studio, we're coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. And I've got a feeling a lot of you will have a lot to say today, so make sure you get those texts in. 650, 650. This hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. You need forklifts that perform under pressure and pallet racking that maximizes your space. Visit them online at RackSteel.com. Lots coming up on the show today. Of course, we'll dive in to whatever happened last night, the debacle in Anaheim, in a moment here. Allison Lucan, contributor for the Seattle Kraken, she'll join me at 12:30. The Canucks play the Kraken tomorrow, wrapping up this road trip. And then Randeep Janda, of course, color analyst for the Canucks here on Sportsnet 650, part of Hockey Night in Canada, Punjabi. He will join me in studio for the final hour of the show from 1 to 2. So, Allison Lucan, 12:30, Randeep Janda, 1. But right now, let's go to the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, February 28th, the last day of February, and the headline is the Canucks lose an ugly one. I called it a debacle, a mess, a disaster, catastrophic, but just plain ugly really is what it was. 5-2 against the Ducks last night in Southern California. They blow a 2-0 lead after the first period, and look, there's a lot of concerning things that you could pinpoint or zero in on after that game. Another blown lead. The play of Archer Shelovs, Elias Pettersson, don't worry, we'll get to him at a certain point. But big picture, really, just the number one thing that's wrong with this team, or the most concerning thing coming out of last night, is the Canucks have zero ability to dictate terms to other teams right now. Zero ability to impose their will, impose their identity on a game, on another team, on the opposing team, to make the other team play in the manner that the Canucks want to. The Ducks, yeah, I know they've been playing some better hockey recently, but you look at their results from a whole season perspective, they're one of the worst teams in the league at controlling play at 5-on-5, and they took that game over in the final 40 minutes. The Canucks had basically zero ability to slow the Ducks down off the rush and zero ability to mount a real dangerous, threatening push when they were trailing in the third period. And again, that's one of the teams that is typically really, really struggles to control play. And they dominated. That game in the final 40 minutes was played in the exact manner the Ducks wanted it to, and the Canucks were essentially powerless to stop them. That is very, very concerning for the Canucks for the final 24 games of this season. And looking ahead, if they are able to sneak in to the playoffs. Again, considering the opponent, all of that, and I know there's been some very, very ugly ones this year, some bad losses on the resume for the Canucks, that might be the worst loss of the season. When you consider the stakes, the time of year we're in right now, you'd already lost two. Yeah, you won in LA, but you desperately needed points. You're desperately trying to establish some sort of edge in the playoff race, some sort of margin in the playoff race in the Western Conference. We're also a week out from the trade deadline, so you're trying to show management something. You're trying to convince them, hey, this team is worth maybe not buying for, but at the very least, keep us together and let us try to do something. These are your games, the last chance you have to really make that pitch to the front office. And you're going up against the Anaheim Ducks. Yeah, it's second half of a back-to-back, but guess what? Anaheim was flying back from the East Coast. They played in Buffalo on Tuesday. We all know how difficult the first game for a West Coast team can be. First game back after an East Coast road trip. So it wasn't a perfect position for the Ducks either. And you go up 2-0, and then again, you get basically skated off the ice by the Anaheim Ducks after that and lose 5-2. That might be the worst loss of the season for the Canucks, even though I understand that's a very high bar to clear. It's a crowded field in that category for the Canucks. So we can talk more about, you know, what this means and the implications of the playoff race. And all of a sudden, hey, Anaheim's probably waking up today saying, hey, man, we got a chance at this. And certainly Utah's right there. They won last night. Calgary lost. So it remains status quo between the Canucks and the Calgary Flames. But there's a lot of teams lurking not that far behind the Vancouver Canucks right now. But I do think we're missing the point a little bit if we're focusing on the playoff race and the implications of the playoff race. I think there's a bigger story happening here. Not just about Elias Pettersson. Again, we'll talk about that. But a bigger story happening with this Canucks. And I was thinking about this last night after the game this morning. You know, we're so used to talking about the core of this team, right? Who's in the core? Are they good enough? Can this core win the Stanley Cup? What does management need to surround this core with? Can Rick Tocchet get the most out of this core? That's a very familiar conversation for everyone following this team, covering this team, going back a few seasons now. But the truth is, right now, in the here and now, in the present, this team does not have a core. There is no core of the Vancouver Canucks. One player, Quinn Hughes, is not a core. A core is a group of players. Small group, but a group of players. And right now, the Canucks just simply don't have anything you can look at and identify as that's the core we're building around going forward. These are our core guys who are going to carry us to where we want to go. JT Miller is gone. Elias Pettersson, only present in the most technical sense. He's on the ice, but we all know the score there right now and what he's given the team at the moment. Demko, not on the ice right now. I think it's fair to say at the very least a wild card. So coming into the year, or at least at points last year before the Demko injury and before Pettersson's play completely fell off the map, you look at it and say, hey, we've got four core players we feel really, really good about. Now you're down to one. And again, if you have one core player, you do not have a core. You have one really, really good player. And the Canucks are lucky that Quinn Hughes is absolutely phenomenal. Or this season would look even uglier than it has already. But we need to stop talking about the core because it just simply does not exist for the Canucks. And that's a pretty scary proposition. That's a pretty scary thought. And again, that's kind of why I'm looking at it this way. The playoff race is almost a footnote at this point. Of course the team wants to make the playoffs. And I was listening to the postgame show, right? And they're saying, oh, wave the white flag, pack it in. The players aren't going to do that. Of course they're not. Careers are short. You want every chance you get, you can get to play in the Stanley Cup playoffs. It's important. I understand that. So the players are going to go for it. But fundamentally, making or missing the playoffs this year, it's not going to change anything about this team's future. It's not going to be the decisive factor in whatever happens next for the Vancouver Canucks. Because the big question now isn't, do they make the playoffs? Can they be a tough out once they make the playoffs? That's not the right question. The big question now is, what does the next core of this team look like? Who is a part of the next legitimate, competitive core for the Vancouver Canucks? Is there any chance that it can still include Elias Pettersson and Thatcher Demko? Will it include Quinn Hughes at the end of this contract? Even if Quinn Hughes does stick around, if Thatcher Demko and Elias Pettersson don't get back to being regular elite contributors, you still need to go out and find two to three, not just two to three good players, two to three legitimately elite players to surround Quinn Hughes to be a Stanley Cup contending team. And the reason I say this is a really scary question, like that's the hardest thing to do in the NHL, is build that core of elite talent. Who's going to be in our core? That's the same question that Chicago's asking, that Anaheim's asking right now, that Buffalo is asking, that San Jose is asking. Some of those teams have more obvious contenders for that position to answer that question on the roster, in the organization right now, than the Canucks do. It's incredible that we've gotten here in such a hurry after last season when, again, you go back 12 months basically and you're feeling really good about this team's core. At the very least, pretty good about this team's core going forward. But now it has basically disappeared. It has gone up in smoke. They do not have a core at the moment. They have Quinn Hughes. And again, one player does not give you a core. So now the big question is, what does the next core group of players look like? Who, other than Quinn Hughes, that's currently here, is a legitimate candidate to be part of that? And how do you go about finding it? And those are big existential type questions for an NHL franchise to be asking itself. But those questions matter a lot more than, can they hold off Utah and Calgary for the playoffs? Can they win a couple games in the first round? That, I know it's important to the players. I know it's important to the organization. And yes, it's a big deal to get a chance to play in the Stanley Cup playoffs. But that's a much smaller question than the bigger question about who's going to carry this team going forward? Who is going to be a core member of the Vancouver Canucks going forward? And by the way, Quinn Hughes, phenomenal last night. Really, really good, I thought. Far and away the best player on the ice for either team. Obviously the most dangerous player, with, I guess, the possible exception of Tyler Myers in the first period for the Canucks. But, you know, Quinn Hughes begs Rick Tocchet to let him play against LA. Comes back, plays over 20 minutes in that one after sneaking in under the deadline to get back into that, the roster deadline to get in that game. Comes back again on a back-to-back, plays really well, plays a ton of minutes. This is a guy who is desperately pushing to get back in the lineup, coming back from injury, who missed on an opportunity to go represent his country and play with his brother at the Four Nations so he could get healthy to help this team, and immediately gets back and is basically peak Quinn Hughes, giving it his all in that game last night. And he sees that performance from the rest of his team. I can't imagine how that feels for a competitor like Quinn Hughes, who has been so professional, elevated his game so much, handled everything about this situation and this team so impressively. And it feels like the rest of the team is letting Quinn Hughes down right now. When he's giving that type of effort and pushing that hard to come back from injury and help this team, and that's the type of follow-up response, follow-up effort, that's got to be tremendously disappointing. I also mentioned part of what's happening, of course, with the Canucks right now is, as Drantz reported a couple of weeks ago, you know, management was going into this stretch of games, six games before the trade deadline, between the Four Nations break and the trade deadline next Friday, 1 week today. Well, they've played four of them now, and they've gone 1-3, or one and three, excuse me, 1-4. 2 points out of a possible eight. They've got the Kraken and the Ducks, but the best you can do in that six-game stretch now is .500. If you win those last two games, that shouldn't be convincing anyone. If you win two games against the Kraken and the Ducks, that should do nothing to change how management or anybody else looks at this team right now. If these were six pivotal games and management was going to at least partially choose their course based on how the Canucks performed in these games, well, we've gotten our answer now. And I don't know how to translate that, what that will translate to in action at the deadline, but it's very, very clear this team needs to be in seller mode, at least to some degree. I've never believed in the own rental option for Brock Besser, keeping him unsigned past the deadline and seeing how it works out. That has to be 100% off the table at the moment. Guys like Derek Forbort and Pugh Suter, well, Derek Forbort, I think, is a must trade at this point. With the depth you started to build on the blue line, the depth coming in the system, that's a must trade. Carson Soucy, can you find a taker and somewhere he'll wave to go and reallocate some of that cap space? Pugh Suter, like him as a player, but if he's in demand around the league, that's something you have to consider. But number one is Brock Besser. Maybe there's still a path to signing him. Although if you don't have a core, and even last year I wouldn't have put Brock Besser in as a core player, and I don't think he's going to be a core player going forward. He's a really nice complementary player. But if you don't have a core, it's a lot harder to commit to your complementary players long term and in the future. But Brock Besser, I think one thing we have answered with 100% certainty, you cannot afford to go past the trade deadline with Brock Besser unsigned as a pending unrestricted free agent. You have to make a decision one way or another between now and the trade deadline next Friday. Okay, lots more we can get into from the game over the course of the show. You can send your text in as well. 650, 650. 50. We can talk a little Elias Pettersson, of course. We can talk some Rick Tocchet later on in the show as well. I do want to move on to the broadsheet portion of things. And I was just talking trade deadline and what the Canucks might do and how this recent stretch of games should influence management, hopefully will influence management. And of course, we're starting to get a lot of reporting around those pending unrestricted free agents as we get closer to the deadline. Frank Saravalli reporting that the Canucks offered Brock Besser a 5-year deal worth $8 million annually to Brock Besser. So we've heard all along, right? The term is the sticking point. The Canucks really like that 5 number. Besser was, you know, hoping 7 or 8. Maybe willing to budge on the AAV a little bit is Besser, or both sides even, if the term is more acceptable. I do wonder, I know Elliot Friedman has made this point, look, if you're willing to go to 5, are you potentially willing to go to 6? That seems like the sweet spot if a deal is going to happen. A 6-year deal, $8 million, something like that. That seems kind of like what we're looking at if the Canucks ask Brock Besser to stay. So the question becomes, what does Brock Besser think he can get on the open market? Does he think he can get that 7th year at $8 million? If he does, well, you're asking him to leave $8 million on the table on this deal by staying. That's a fairly significant hometown discount. So is either side willing to budge beyond that, or is that where things stand? I don't get the sense, and I don't think anyone's reporting that the Canucks have made their final offer to Besser or anything like that, or they've made a decision. There's still a week to go, a week to see how this one progresses. But I think we're starting to see the shape of what a potential compromise would look like and whether, you know, what the meeting point in the middle that the two sides would have to get to. And if you can't get it, I don't like it. I know I've been kind of advocating, yeah, they probably have to trade Besser. It's not because I think poorly of the player. And he's the longest tenured Canuck. He's been a fan favorite. I think he's worked really hard in his time here. He's done a lot for this team. It would suck, but you got to bite the bullet and you got to do what's smart for the long term. And you got to make that deal if you're not willing to budge and meet his asking price. And he's not willing to budge and meet your demands on the contract. Rick Dhaliwal was on with Halford and Brough this morning. He had nothing new to report on Brock Besser, and he also said no progress on contract talks with Pew Suter. And Suter, again, not really your typical deadline ad because you can't point to that one thing that jumps off the screen when you watch him, that one thing that jumps off the stat page. But as Dhaliwal was pointing out, he's so versatile. I do think there would be teams that look at that and say, man, we got a guy that we know we can play on almost literally any position in our lineup, help us out on the penalty kill, play the wing, play center, bottom six, top six in a pinch, has a little bit of goal scoring. You got to think there'd be some sort of market there. And this is another player who's going to be in position to demand a pretty significant raise. So the Canucks, I've been more open to the idea of keeping Pew Suter as an own rental, especially considering how thin this team is at center. I think the way the team is trending, though, I won't say it's complete no-go for me in the same way it is as Brock Besser, but you can only do it if you think you're at least somewhat interested in retaining his services. If you think there's at least a potential chance that, yeah, we can get a deal done before July 1st. But if you think he's already priced out and he's not in your plans, then again, you got to bite the bullet. And yeah, then we're going to see what, you know, Pettersson, Hedl, Bluger, and Atu Ratu looks like down the middle for the rest of the season, I guess. Doesn't sound great. But sometimes you got to have that short-term pain for that long-term gain. And I think that's one of those situations. By the way, I just want to say one other thing on Brock Besser. Because Rick Dhaliwal, I heard him on the show with Halford and Brough this morning, and he's saying, well, how can you trade this guy? You're already one of the worst goal-scoring teams in the league. You're struggling to score so much. Who's going to score goals? Like, yeah, they're one of the worst offensive teams in the league with Besser. They can be one of the worst offensive teams in the league without him, too. There's no upside you're trying to preserve here. You're already living the downside. You're already living the reality where you desperately struggle to score goals. What are you worried about? You got nothing to lose in that regard. So that can't be the reason. Well, I mean, what do you want us to do? Who's going to score goals? You weren't scoring goals anyways. That can't be the logic that leads you to keep Brock Besser past the deadline unsigned. I get it. It's scary. Again, you can't operate out of fear. Sometimes you have to take risks. This is one of those risks that you have to be willing to take. Lineup notes today. It's day off for the team. They will play Seattle tomorrow in Seattle, wrapping up this road trip. Tockett made the big lineup shuffle after the games against Vegas and Utah and looked like it paid dividends against LA. The Hedl line with Garland and Joshua looked fairly dangerous, even if a lot of their chances didn't really end up coming together. I don't know. Did you see any of that last night? Not really. So that lineup shuffle lasted two games, and we're basically back to square one here. We're back to the what options does Rick Tockett really have? What does he do? What's the shuffle to follow the shuffle that you already made 3 days ago? He's got to do something. After a performance like that, after an effort like that against Anaheim, and you heard Rick Tockett's commentary, he was disappointed. He was disappointed with the lack of grit. Thought his team gave in a little bit. They didn't execute the game plan. All of those things typically lead you to believe there's going to be some lineup juggling, but you just did that earlier this week. That's, again, why I would be very, very interested in calling up Lekkomäki if I was the Canucks. I know there's been some questions about his core strength, his ability to hold up at the NHL level right now. But if you're trying to do the, well, we're going to sell a little bit, but we still want to make a push at the playoffs, I think Lekkomäki has to be a part of that. I mean, you're struggling to find 12 forwards to dress right now. They've gone 11-7 in the last couple of games. I know that's partially because of Quinn Hughes' injury status, but I think that's also partially because, you know, your extra forwards, your scratches at forwards the last couple of games have been Neil Zamon and Arshdeep Bains, not guys who are productive at the NHL level. So you've got a need. You've got an opening. Are there questions about it? Sure. But I think it is time to see what Lekkomäki can do and help you down the stretch here at the NHL level. We'll see what Rick Tockett and his coaching staff do. I wonder if we're done with 11-7 as well now that Quinn Hughes basically looks like he's going to be back to playing Quinn Hughes minutes. And I'll be curious to see who comes out of the lineup on the blue line if that is the case. Of course, DPD Elias Pettersson didn't play a lot, didn't look great on one of the Ducks goals, so doesn't see much ice time after that. Does that mean he takes a turn in the press box, or is it a veteran like Carson Soucy coming back out? Playoff and standings update. Canucks playoff odds dropped pretty significantly per Dom's model after that one, going from 78% going into the game all the way down to 68%. I believe that is the lowest point they've been all year per Dom's model, and I think that accurately captures how we're all feeling about this team. Least amount of confidence for them to make the playoffs that we've had all year, probably right now after that performance against the Ducks. Now, Calgary did lose as well, so it remains that dead heat position. Canucks have 65 points in 59 games. Calgary has 64 points in 58. Utah won again, so they're up to 63 points in 60, just two back of the Canucks, albeit the Canucks have a game in hand. Even St. Louis, they've won three in a row. They're at 62 points in 60. And Anaheim, kind of, if you squint, on the fringes of the playoff race now with 59 points in 58 games, six back of the Canucks, but they do have a game in hand. So, I mean, if the Ducks win their game in hand, they're 4 points back. The Canucks are now closer to that kind of chasing pack than they are to the other teams in their division, really, even Colorado is starting to pull away from the Canucks as well in that second wild card spot. So that's how things stand for the Canucks in their quest to make the playoffs. We'll take a break here. We'll wrap up the whiteboard. As I said, we'll still get into some Elias Pettersson stuff, some Rick Tockett stuff, lots left over from that game last night. Send your text in now. We'll go through the inbox in the break here, flag some. We'll talk to Allison Lucan next, but we'll have some time after that to get into some of your texts and getting some other stuff from the game last night. That's next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.